Welcome, everyone, to our second series in conversation with Dean Tomaselli and experts at Montefiore and Einstein as we're talking through COVID-19 and everything that is happening on campus. Dean Tomaselli, why don't you just jump on in?
Thank you. So again, good morning, everybody. And I want to thank you for joining today. Today with me is our Senior Associate Dean for Medical Education, Dr. Josh Nasanchuk, and he happens to also be a professor in the Department of Microbiology and Immunology, as well as an infectious disease specialist. So he's a perfect person to be talking to us today. Before I introduce him and let him take over the podium, a bit of an update on where things stand right now. This is obviously an exceedingly challenging time for us. We, as the United States, now lead the world in the number of cases of COVID, with over 86,000 cases that have been reported in this country. That's the bad news. The good news is that our case mortality rate remains relatively low at about 1.5 to 2%. That's low relative to China, much lower than Italy, and much lower than Spain. However, we're still at the beginning of this pandemic in the U.S. and New York is particularly hard hit, and it is really an epicenter with about 40,000 cases in New York. 29,000 of those are in New York City, with 400 people in the city having succumbed to this disease. At Montefiore is no exception. 3 weeks ago, we had, on May 12th, we had four patients in our health system with COVID. We now have 550, and another 300 or so who are what we call people who are of interest and may, in fact, have disease, but we don't have testing back on them yet. So we've been very active clinically. Obviously, we've expanded beds. We're going to be expanding beds even further. Josh will tell you something about the role that that our students are playing and some of our other faculty and physicians are playing. We have a number of challenges clinically. The biggest challenge is right now we're okay with personal protective equipment, but this is always an ongoing and very dynamic and fluid situation, and always looking constantly for more PPE so that our providers can be safe as they're giving care to people who are incredibly sick. This also has changed virtually everything that we do at the medical school, everything from admissions to medical education to research. And I'd just like to spend a minute or two on what we're doing in the research domain. We have effectively shut down all laboratories with the exception of those that are actively working on COVID-19. And we do have a number of laboratories that are working actively on this viral problem and doing a number of very innovative things, including screening potential antibody therapies, working on the development of new antibody therapies, working on the development of new vaccines. They are very well integrated with the health system and doing a series of tests on samples that have been isolated from patients in the Montefiore Health System to try and understand the biology of this virus a little bit better. Also deploying our laboratories to do testing on patients who've actually been infected and survived and presumably have antibodies to the virus. This is important because these people have what's called convalescent serum, and that convalescent serum may also be an important way to treat this virus in the most sick of the sick who are infected. We're also developing new cell therapies, and are doing clinical trials using things you've probably heard about on the news. We are one of the centers that's using a drug that was developed by Gilead called remdesivir to treat this virus. We're also using a drug called sarilumab, which is developed by Regeneron in Westchester to treat patients with this disease. Again, we're part of the group of institutions that are using patient serum, or will be using patient serum to try and treat those who are acutely ill. And we have a number of other studies that are being used in people who are very ill with the disease, but also earlier on in the disease. And these include trying to study and understand the role of the antimalarial drug hydroxychloroquine in the treatment of this disease, as well as antioxidants that have been suggested to be particularly useful. So lots going on, a huge challenge for us clinically, a huge challenge for us educationally, a huge challenge for us on the research side. So what I'd like to do right now is just stop and ask Dr. Nasanchuk to talk a little bit about COVID-19 from his perspective and the role that different components of the medical school, and in particular our medical students, are playing in the response to this crisis. So Josh?
So thank you, Dr. Tomaselli. As Dr. Tomaselli said, I'm one of the infectious disease faculty, and I've just been incredibly impressed and proud of our colleagues who are engaged on the front lines in infectious diseases, our hospitalists, the emergency department. The evolution of this disease has really changed how we approach each patient on an almost daily basis, and the response from our faculty has really been inspirational. Coronaviruses are not new. Some of them are very benign, and some of them, like this one, are extraordinarily severe. And we're playing catch up. This particular one is very readily transmissible. And when we started to see that it was in our community, pulled our pre-clerkship students, that is the year one and two students, out into a virtual education sphere. Really what we were trying to do was to have increased self-isolation very early on. And to do that, we had to shift from classroom-based education to a variety of systems to provide them with their ongoing curricular education. And we've been able to do that incredibly successfully, with the help of our information technology group, and all of our faculty who are teaching have done a remarkable job of coming up with new protocols to deliver the content that the students need to continue to be successful. We also took a big step in how we assess our students. Typically, they have to come in to our large rooms and they are proctored for their examinations. Every Einstein student signs an honor code when they are enrolled. And based on that, I felt that we were able to administer our tests remotely. And so all of our tests are electronic, and we gave them the code for the exams. They had a specified amount of time, and they've been taking their tests remotely. And it has worked extremely well, and we've had very positive feedback from the course directors as well as from the students. When the disease continued to increase in our community, and at the time, we were running behind in sourcing protective equipment for our healthcare providers, we made the decision to remove our students from the hospital systems in order for our healthcare providers to have those equipment that the students otherwise would be using. We also realized that as the epidemic progressed, it was going to be possible that our health system was going to be so stressed that our students would become a very valuable component that could come and assist our physicians as it moved forward. And so we've been delivering their content virtually. So there are some online cases they've been doing. They are doing group meetings through video chat. They have various assignments that they've been completing. They've also been doing some remarkable volunteering, which has really ranged from simple things like babysitting or creating thank you cards and videos for our care providers, to staffing the occupational health service by answering calls from employees who have COVID-like symptoms, and also to advise people who've been exposed or possibly been exposed to individuals with COVID-19. However, as you heard from Dr. Tomaselli, the progression of this disease has been really remarkable, which has led us to ask for volunteers in our fourth year class to return to assist the physicians taking care of these patients. The ability to have the protective devices has changed because we've increased our sourcing of these materials. And currently our health systems, Montefiore and Jacoby in particular, now have available resources that it's safe for our students to use the protective devices in addition to all of our other providers. And so we have a remarkable group of volunteer students who on Monday are going to join with specific teams to help care for these patients in our hospital system. We have other students who, as I said, have been volunteering in the occupational health, and they're going to continue to do that. And we're trying to develop systems where they can also call patients who now don't have appointments anymore because we've closed our outpatient clinics because of this disease, to make sure that those staff can work in the hospital and care for the patients. So from the first year to the fourth year, we've gone mostly virtual. We're doing our testing from a remote location, and our students are doing incredible volunteer activities. So I think that's pretty much a summary of where we are right now. This is a really dynamic situation, and we are trying to make sure that we continue to deliver the Einstein quality that we expect in order to have the students graduate with the excellence that we also expect.
I prefer that we'd rather not have to bring the child in.
So, Josh, thanks. Maybe you can elaborate a little bit about what the students are doing in the research sphere as well. I know that a few are involved in organizing some of these clinical trials that are ongoing.
So that's a really important piece that we have students. The last 2 years, about 50% of our students have published a scholarly paper in a reputable journal. And we also have students that take an additional year and have a year of research, some of whom do our clinical research training program, which is a master's degree in translational research. These individuals have extensive training and are expert at extracting data from healthcare records. And so several of these students are now involved in the convalescent serum trial that you heard about, as well as helping with the remdesivir trial through the NIH. So we have some student leads who've now brought in additional students. They are looking at every patient's chart. They are looking at how people are responding or are not responding to the various therapies in order to figure out what treatment strategies we really need to be applying. So it's really from, as I said, from the babysitting to the phone calls to being on the front lines looking at patients and how they're clinically doing, that our students have been responding in an incredible way to this remarkable epidemic.
So Josh, we've also gotten a couple of questions about the students, and one that I thought was that you could address is this going to delay medical students from graduating on time?
So that's something that we've worked really hard to make sure does not happen. We've been in communication with the Association of American Medical Colleges and with the Liaison Commission for Medical Education, who are our accreditors. And we are linking all of our competencies to what the students have done and are supposed to be doing. And we feel very confident that we can graduate our students on time. In fact, with Dr. Tomaselli's direction, we have now also started to look about whether we can graduate students early. The concept of graduating them early, therefore, they will be able to perform on a higher level in our hospitals during this epidemic. So we're in the early stages of that. We've looked at every single student's transcript. We have plans for every student who has not yet completed all of the requirements. And we're confident that we can graduate our students early if the need arises. And as long as there's no unintended consequence to those students, such as any issues with federal loans, and we're looking into all the different options regarding that, as well as housing and insurance. So we want to make sure that if we do graduate early, that our students are in the position where they can continue to be successful. For the other students that are supposed to be going into the hospital in another couple of months, We have virtual plans in place for them in case they are delayed. So there are, again, a lot of moving pieces. We have Plan A and Plan B, which have already gone out the window because of the progression of this epidemic. So we're on to Plan C and D, and we are continuously reevaluating these plans as changes occur. If we can get our students back in early, if we are able to control this epidemic, we have a plan for that. If we have a control over this, but it takes a while for our health systems to come back into structure, we have a plan for that. So we are very confident that each year we'll have a plan for. Additionally, for our incoming class who is currently being selected, if they are delayed from being able to arrive on campus, we now have a virtual platform which is highly effective in delivering content, and we're confident that that group can matriculate and engage in our educational curriculum very effectively.
Terrific. There's a question about areas on our campus that are being designated and considered for surge labs. And yes, that certainly is happening in the Hutch. There are procedure areas that are now designated to house patients who need hospitalization. That is happening over the course of this weekend. In that context, we're identifying what our housing inventory looks like here to make sure that if there are providers who need to spend long hours or in fact become infected themselves and need to be isolated, we can isolate them in housing on campus. The other question that I think is particularly germane is, what are the greatest need of our researchers and medical staff right now, and how can people in the community help? And perhaps both of us will answer this, but I'll give Josh a chance to take first crack at it.
So the simplest thing is we need people to stay home who do not have to be out and about. And the other is, if there are resources that you have that are able to source things like the appropriate masks and gowns, we're collecting those from all different sources. One of our students has a sister in China who has a manufacturing plant, and she is producing masks at a rapid rate that they are going to deliver to our healthcare system. So really the first thing is to have our community stay safe through self-isolation. And the other is, if there are resources that you have that can support our health system, that is what we need as well.
Yeah, so I think that's terrific. I think that's the acute need. The acute need is support of providers and researchers to make sure that they can do any and all the work that they need to do safely. Obviously, the longer term needs are those that relate to how costly this is to all of the enterprise, not just the cost of clinical care, the cost of kind of repurposing lots of areas on campus, but also the cost of having many of our laboratories down for a period of time and having to regenerate a lot of the very important resources and pieces of reagents that are needed over time. But again, that's not the phase we're in right now. The phase we're in right now is dealing with the acute medical emergency. And I'm happy to say that everybody's pulling their oars in the same direction. We've identified, this is another question, not only students, but people who are primarily researchers who have MD degrees on this campus, who will also be in line to help out, as well as identifying Einstein and Montefiore alumni within a 100-mile radius of our campus. So it really and truly is a Manhattan Project type of thing to deal with. In my professional career, the challenge of my professional lifetime, and I started at a time when HIV was, I was a medical student here when HIV was beginning to emerge and went to San Francisco for residency. So my career has been bookended by infectious diseases that have been an enormous challenge to the world, to our nation, and to our health system. So I would like to just take this opportunity, if there are any other questions that people might have, happy to ask them. We have a few minutes left, and then both Josh and I will have to get back to work. So any questions?
So this is
I have one.
Yeah. One of the things I think is also important is that all of these research opportunities that we've engaged in were done without any funding that was allocated for them. And the response to these types of issues, if we were to have a pool that where we could do dedicated quick response, would be very effective. And again, all the student volunteers that are doing all this clinical data extraction are doing this on a purely voluntary, unpaid basis. And the amount of hours they're putting into it has been really intense and remarkable.
So sorry, there's a question.
Yeah, this is Jim Aiello from the Greenwich Economic Forum. Just interested in, from both of your perspective, what are the most exciting research projects that are going on right now within Montefiore or Einstein, or even more broadly, if it's outside and you're connected to those projects in any way?
Yeah, so at the risk of sounding a little bit parochial, we have a couple of ongoing projects that are looking at identifying specific subsets of immune cells, particularly T cells, with technology platforms that have been developed here at Einstein and Montefiore that not only would serve to be therapeutic for coronavirus, but for the next pandemic virus, because we know that this is not going to be the last. We hope that there's not another one soon in our future, but this is an ongoing issue, and we have people like Kartik Chandran, who's actually developed therapeutics for Ebola virus, people like Steve Almo and Harris Goldstein, who've developed immune cell platforms that are useful for not only infectious disease, but also to modulate the immune system. Harris calls it to hack the immune system in a way to turn on the immune system in cases of resistant cancers, but turn it off in the circumstance of, for example, autoimmune disease. So again, personally, those are the things that I think are most exciting to me at this point. Josh, do you have a...
I agree with what you said. You know, and the other thing is just using computational biology to do a lot of this stuff in silico instead of having to have things on hand is really remarkable. The power of that is increasing with AI.
Yes, Aviv Bergen's group of computational biology is a leader in that area as well.
Thank you.
Sure.
May I make a comment?
Absolutely.
Yes. This is Miriam Levin. I'm a pediatrician in Bronxville, New York. My office is functioning during this for obvious reasons, although I must say that I recently had a comment by one of my patients who said she couldn't understand why a pediatric office should be considered an essential medical project at this time. That's only humorous. I'd like to note that the medical students are being asked to step up to provide both work in the hospital, in labs, and in the community. But when they become practitioners, there will be no response to this. What will happen is that they will be completely buried by insurance companies and the legal aspects of this country. So just to let them know that they should not expect any respect or anything in return or appreciation. I think that's wrong, of course. And I was wondering if we could think of something to do about that to change the status of doctors in general.
So I'm going to say that I don't fully agree with what you just said, because we have seen such incredible response from the community for the efforts that we are undertaking. One of my assistant deans came home last night to the apartment that he lives in, and there was a note on the door that was something that would bring tears to your eyes if you were to read it, about how grateful this individual was who left a stack of N95s, which are specific masks that are used for protecting against this virus, at the person's door. So I do hear what you're saying, and there is a lot of negativity in some spheres, but there's also incredible gratitude.
Thank you.
So I think we're at time, and what I'd like to do is wrap up. I want to thank everybody for participating, let you know that we will continue these kind of informational calls with different aspects of how we're responding to this pandemic. I want to reiterate what Josh said. One of the things that we can all do is be good stewards of the public health and make sure that we keep physical distance and do only the things that we